Blog Talk Radio. All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron, and just bear with us here. We're going to be connecting with our co-host this week. Of course, we have, as always, Tony the Tornado Pentacal. We're going to connect in a second here with him. And I just got to turn on the mic, I think, on the studio once I get to it for Tom Padgett. We're going to have to ask Tom what his nickname's going to be. I don't know if he's picked one yet, but we'll find out in a minute. Definitely are going to have a lot of discussions tonight about the big fight over the weekend that created a lot of controversy, the Manny Pacquiao bout there, where all three at 115 to 113, only two, or two of them for Bradley, only one for Pacquiao. Tony, we got you?
You got me.
All right.
I got a lot to say.
All right. I'm sure you do. Tom, can you hear us?
I can hear you, Rich.
All right. Have you picked yourself a nickname yet?
I can go by my old stand-up comedy stage name, a Psychic Tom. I used to work on a psychic line.
Oh, nice.
Hey, it's an interesting conversation piece, you know.
So did you see this bad decision coming then?
No, I can't read my own cards. You know, as many years as I've been around, you'd really think I would be shockproof. But where do we begin with this? Where do we begin?
Well, I mean, the most peculiar thing to me about the whole controversy is the fact that all three judges had it scored the same way, which, I mean, to me, it's just baffling how you could score that fight that close to begin with, and secondly, that all three judges could have that score. Just too much of a coincidence there.
I mean, I'll tell you what bothered me. I watched the fight. My father and I watched together. You know, he's a very astute fight fan. He's not the Rain Man of boxing like I am, but he's very knowledgeable.
All right, we're back. Tony, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear.
We got Tom back yet, but hopefully he'll call back in to the hotline.
I know over there was talking about was watching my dad.
Right.
We were watching it, and a few years ago, we were watching a boxing match on pay-per-view, and it was more of like a technical fight. It wasn't, you know, knockdown, you know, bang out, you know, slugfest. And one of my friends is a diehard mixed martial arts fan. Well, this is terrible. You know, we use this horrible issue, kneeing each other and going for elbows. And I'm like, can we just shut up and appreciate what you're seeing, which he couldn't see. I can appreciate the finer points of boxing. So as we're watching this fight, you know, and you could see not just the things that Pacquiao was doing clearly, but the little things he was doing, you know. I mean, Bradley landed a few punches, but, I mean, obviously from the punch numbers, Pacquiao not just outlanded him, but outlanded him in almost every round with quality punches. These weren't like pitter-patter little punches. He landed some very hard shots. I had the fight, as did Harold Letterman, 119-109, you know, 11 rounds to one. And there was one round in there that if Pacquiao would have landed maybe three or four more solid punches, I was inclined to give it a 10-8. And that might have been the second or third round. But he really pounded him pretty good in there that I said, shit, this fight ain't going to go past five. So they go up to the scorecards, and I hear, you know, the first judge, 115-113. And I looked at my dad, and he goes, and then they said, for Pacquiao, I said, this fight's going to be a fucking split decision. I said, first of all, when I heard 116, 113, I said, boy, that judge really screwed it up. He had it too close. At least he had it too close for the right guy. Then I heard the other two judges, then the next judge had it for Bradley. I said, that's a fucking disgrace. Then the third judge comes out, and what I heard and knew, which I damn near shit my pants. I really did. I was so angry. This is telling you how angry I was. As we all know, I often trash my place of employment, and never the happiest guy there. But my boss happens to be a big boxing fan. I felt the need to text him at 1:30 in the morning to tell him how fucking atrocious it was. And the first thing he came back to me was, he goes, I am so pissed off. He goes, I don't think I can sleep right now. And I came back to him with, I always rip the judging in the state of Texas. Yeah, and actually, a lot of Manny Pacquiao fights had been in Texas at the Cowboy Stadium. And I said, I wish the fight was in Texas. I said, the judges aren't so confident there. They probably would have screwed it up and ended up getting it right. And ended up like these schmucks that, you know, atrociously got it wrong. And then I know Timothy Bradley said he was going to go back and watch the tape, which tells me right there, if you look at that fight again, which I could not. I could not look at it again. I mean, maybe when I cool down a little bit, I'll go back and I'll re-score it again. I'm pretty sure. I said, at the most, if you were generous, you could have given him maybe three, borderline four rounds.
Yeah, I think the closest media score I saw was 117 to 111. So
I haven't heard of anyone that was anywhere near these judges.
No, not at all.
Well, this discussion's short, but we do have a guest tonight, Shannon Erke. Actually, we got two numbers calling, and I'm not sure which one is which. I think she's one of them. I don't know. Hello?
Hey, this is actually Ricky Vasquez from Phenom. Shannon's trying to call in. Are you guys ready for her?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
All right.
I'm in.
She's in.
Shannon.
All right.
Right here. All right. So, Shannon, we cut you off last week due to technical difficulties there. And I think I remember you were talking about the women's fight game in MMA at the time. So, what were you? I mean, obviously, you're impressed by it. What were your thoughts on that?
I actually just wrote an article for Vigilante MMA about women's MMA and how, you know, it's debatable on whether or not, you know, these women fighters are up to par as far as the male fights and as far as viewers and stuff like that. But I think the question last time was, you know, what do you find that, you know, that's craziest so far about your MMA experience? And I think that the craziest part was I wasn't expected to be so blown away by the women's MMA as I have been.
Cool. And you obviously you do some training in little MMA jiu-jitsu stuff on the side?
When I was in the Marine Corps, we did mixed martial arts. So I had that experience in that way. Since being out of the Marine Corps, I haven't been doing as much just because I've been busy modeling and stuff like that. But when you already know, you know, a lot of the moves from just being around other Marines and going for your different belts, you learn actually a lot. You know, as far as being with the UFC and watching, you know, the UFC and the fights and the different techniques. But hopefully, you know, once I get settled down, I can, I'd like to do more jiu-jitsu type training.
Cool. Yeah, that's one of the things with the women's MMA that we've tried to follow pretty closely on our site. And I actually had an experience in high school where I was on a team with the first female wrestler. And whoever wrestled varsity in Massachusetts. Well, she wasn't in my weight class, so I think I only had to even practice with her only a couple times in the whole season. But she held her own.
You guys are relieved when they're not in their weight class.
Yeah, she actually, I remember the first match where she beat a kid, and you know, he was like the runt of the team. And mm-hmm. they actually the kids made fun of him as it was, and then
yep.
she ended up beating him in a match that was kind of like after the whole event was over, and everybody's kind of just watching the scrimmage. It was all the kids on each team just watching, and just incredible to see her win and go on from there. She actually wrestled for Harvard for a little while as the first
yep.
female wrestler there, yep. so that always kind of
yeah,
stuck
that's
with
kinda,
me.
That's, that's kind of how wrestling's always been. It's like, you know, with basketball, you can go to the NBA, the WNBA, and then you get these wrestlers, and you're like, okay, well, what do? They can wrestle in college and, you know, hopefully get a scholarship and stuff. But then you're like, well, where do they go from there? Do they go to the Olympics? You know, especially with these females, you know, you can be a great female wrestler, but can you really make into a career? And, you know, now some of these girls like Sarah McMahon, who, you know, was this Olympic wrestler, is now, you know, fighting, doing some stuff with Pro Elite, and she's like, all right, that's awesome that I can do something more than just wrestling, you know, in high school and college, but she can actually make it into a career for herself.
Right. And do you have any events coming up? Were you going to be doing the Ring Girl services there?
I will. I'll be with Sterling Entertainment from June 22nd and 23rd. They have fights both nights in Minneapolis at the Hyatt downtown. I've actually worked with them before. The fights were actually really, really good the last time I was there. So I'm looking forward to doing that. And then actually in July, I'll be at the UFC Expo with Ranger Up at the Ranger Up booth. Those are my next
cool.
big things.
You looking forward to that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I think I was talking about that last time, you know, being with Ranger Up and those guys who, a lot of them are former military. I always enjoy working with those people because, you know, we have our own little separate military lingo that a lot of other people don't understand.
Right. Yeah, I still remember a lot of the old terms. Yeah. From the military school life there. We actually had a ton of school-based terms too, in addition to the military stuff. The lingo, Dark 30, we used to always say. Getting up for PT and stuff.
Right.
But what do you think about the UFC? You know, obviously they're the top dog, Pro Elites, one of those companies that kind of came back from the dead and still competing against the UFC. What do you think about how they're developing and turning into this big juggernaut?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
How do you think the UFC is developing? What do you think about them as an organization?
As the UFC?
Yeah.
I think the UFC is about to have some other, hopefully, you know, there are so many different fight organizations, and it'll be interesting to see how well the UFC is doing because, you know, before they were going bankrupt and the Ultimate Fighter is the thing that saved them. But like any show, it's going to get great ratings at the beginning because people are interested. And then after a while, the ratings start going down. So, you know, with the last Ultimate Fighter, they had to do that live show to really get people's attention again. But it had really mixed reviews. Some people really liked it. Some people really didn't like it. So it'll be interesting to see how well they can keep up, especially with a lot of other fight organizations getting bigger and bigger.
Right. Yeah. Actually, last week Tom and I were discussing a lot about the Tough Live format and how it's really not healthy for the fighters
right.
to be
right.
fighting on the show. First of all, 3 weeks in a row or 4 weeks in a row, whatever happens during the showtime, but then to not even get a rest. And
right.
have to go right onto the live show and compete for a UFC slot. And
yeah.
you're wasted from being in the house all that time and just beat up.
Yeah, it's got to be a lot of extra stress on those fighters to have to do it live all the time.
This week I just read, too, that they've already decided to scrap that whole plan to do the live show. Now it's not going to be live.
This season it won't be.
Right. It's going to be...
Wow.
Back to a tape, and they've also threatened, Fox has threatened Dana White and all those folks that they're going to have to move to a new day because the ratings were so bad, and that was another thing we talked about last week.
Yeah, exactly. That Friday night was disastrous, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fight night.
Well, on a Friday night, you have so many other huge shows going on. And I remember watching one night at a casino when I was doing a King of the Cage fight, and there was, I think it was college basketball. They were doing a bunch of playoffs and stuff. So they wouldn't even turn on Ultimate Fighter because everyone wanted to see college basketball. Like, that's hard to compete with. So, yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. They probably have to move to something that's, you know, they don't have to compete with so many other sports as well.
Well, at least there was some feedback pretty quick, though. Yeah, so that's good. At least they're going to make an adjustment. I'm glad to hear that.
Right.
Yeah, it was definitely something that I figured they would have to rethink no matter what. They were quick about it. Thank God for this one. Another thing they probably need to work on a little bit more is the steroid situation. It's kind of getting ugly with the testosterone replacement therapy. Some people get an exemption. Some people using it while they're injured to recover quicker, and then they don't test for it during the fight because they drop off of it or whatever. So that's kind of getting to be a hot button issue. What do you think about that? Have you run into any situations like that where fighters have talked about it, or you know, fighters are doing steroids or testosterone?
Personally, I haven't actually. As surprising as that sounds, I really haven't seen a whole or heard a whole lot about at least fighters that you know I've worked with or come in contact with that have really been on any type of steroids. No.
Yeah, it's another one of those things that people are kind of getting a little bit up in arms about, and Dana's come out and said, well, you know, we might start a testing program here, but he hasn't really gone out and done it. And at the same time, this injury thing has killed the UFC. I never imagined that.
Every time I turn around, it's a different fight. I will look through the fights, like, all right, who's coming up next? I'll be like, all right, this guy's got it for sure. And the next thing you know, it's two totally different fighters going, and I'm like, wait, what? I already had my pick. No, what?
Yeah. And even with their depth, they're having trouble with it because I just actually read, too, last week that they had really horrible attendance at that UFC on FX show. I think it was number 3 down in Florida. There was like 6,000 people in the audience, which sounds like a show attendance. How is Pro Elite? What's that organization like for you, and what's it been like working with them?
I love Pro Elite. Love them. They have a great group of workers behind them. It'll be interesting to see what's next for them because they did have a fight planned at one point in San Jose and then ended up canceling because they didn't do so hot in Hawaii as far as attendance. So they were planning on doing a fight in Chicago coming up, but I don't know for sure if that's going to happen or not. Like I said, the last time I did a fight for them was back in January, at the end of January in Hawaii for that week I was there. And then after that, I haven't heard a whole lot more about them.
So you're just pretty much trying to look for other freelance opportunities in the meantime?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Well, I've got my name out definitely with Pro Elite. So that has definitely opened up doors for other fight organizations to call me up and stuff like that. And now that I'm with Phenom Management, they've been really awesome at hooking me up with fights and really getting my name out there as well. So, yeah, they've been awesome.
All right. And if any folks out there are listening and you're in need.
Yeah, call me.
Make sure to consider Shannon here. She's not only a big fan of the sport, but she looks good while she's out there. So that's very important to the ring girl. Phenomenon, right?
Thank you. Actually, don't call me. Call Ricky.
Well, tell us a little bit about how people can find you online.
I'm on Twitter. I'm a Twitter fiend. So I'm on Twitter at Shannon Erke. My last name is spelled awkward. It's I-H-R-K-E. And then I'm on Facebook as well. And also you can find me at Vigilante MMA because now I'm doing a blog for them once a month. And then you can also contact me through my manager. It would just be Ricky at phenommanagement.com.
All right. And what's your ultimate goal with all this? What's the grand plan for you?
I am a semester away from getting my marketing degree, actually. And, you know, they say every model kind of has a shelf life. So I really, really love what I do. So I want to keep ring girling and stay, you know, with the MMA as long as possible. But eventually I would like to finish up my marketing degree here in the fall and then try to get on board in some way with a fight organization, maybe doing some sort of promotions and advertising. So I fell in love with MMA, and I just wanted to find a way to kind of keep with it. So when I started going to school and doing all this marketing, I was like, how can I get with a fight organization while being a ring girl? A lot of people think, you know, she's just a pretty face, whatever, and they don't really know that I actually do love the sport and understand the sport and pay attention to the sport. So now that I've been writing and stuff for Vigilante MMA, people are like, okay, you know, she can write too. So I would like to eventually get on board with some sort of fight organization and see what I could do for them as far as advertising.
Well, if you're going to do more writing, one piece of advice I would give you is don't write for Bleacher Report. I just had
yeah.
a really bad experience with them, and it's such a cookie-cutter organization, and they try to make you think, oh, yeah, you're going to get a paid position if you keep working for us, and then they don't do anything for you, even if you're
right.
really good. So.
That
but
seems to be the thing, awesome. Is like you can't seem to be doing stuff for free, otherwise people are going to keep wanting to use you for free.
Right. But, you know, as the Internet develops, one of the best areas for advancement for any kind of creative person is in freelancing with whether it be web design or writing. And,
right.
I used to work for the traditional media newspapers, and, you know, I learned a lot from those editors by watching how they edit my pieces. And, you know, just being an English major period, I had some grammatical skills. So once
right.
I got out of the business and got into the Internet business, I started to realize that, you know, being your own boss is so much better, and
yeah.
being able to pick and choose your gigs and, you know, just do a Google search for opportunities and you find a million of them, you know. It's just
absolutely.
A matter of trying to balance your time and
yeah.
keeping yourself from screwing around too much when you're supposed to be working.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a great opportunity to you know, grow with and get your name out. And it definitely would be something that you could make a career out of if you work hard enough at it. So
right.
Don't get and the mixed martial arts and all that, the combat sports websites, they're growing a mile a minute right now. So
mm-hmm.
that's a good area to be in too.
Definitely.
Now, is there anything else you wanted to let us know about, any other events or hobbies that you have that we didn't get discussed yet?
No, I think we pretty much hit the nail on the head. You know, we'll see what's to come. You know, hopefully with the UFC Expo and stuff, that'll be like another big networking tool that I can use to my advantage. So we'll see what's coming. But I don't like to say too much because I'm superstitious like that and I like to keep my fingers crossed.
Don't count your chickens before they're hatched.
Right.
Well, it's definitely been interesting talking to you. We apologize for the issues last week. It's good to have you back and to get a full interview from you. And
yeah, definitely.
We'll definitely keep everybody posted.
Hey, Rick.
Shannon, one last thing. Does Ranger Up have any other fighters online that they'd like to, that they're trying to sponsor, that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, what, can you tell us a little bit more about Ranger Up before you go?
You know, I actually came in contact with Nick a while ago on Facebook, and actually it was when I did my very first Ring Girl contest. A guy named Mike Camp, who's a matchmaker, said, hey, you know, you should do the spring roll contest with Pro Elite. And I was like, yeah, right, I'm probably not going to win, but whatever, I guess I'll send in a picture and see what happens. And actually, he was like, well, you know, I know some big organizations that may be able to help you out. And he actually contacted Ranger Up and was like, hey, I have this girl. You know, I think she'd be a really great ring girl. Can you help us push her name out there? And Ranger Up was huge. Like, kind of threw me on the website, like, hey, vote for this girl. You know, she's former military. And they blew me up. And that's actually a huge part of why I got to be a ring girl with Crowley in the first place. And so I threw out a video to Ranger Up with them. And, you know, they've been a huge sponsor for me, for a lot of the fighters. And then, you know, as far as I know, they're going to be having some clothing and stuff like that. So actually, when I go out to Vegas, we're going to see whether or not I'm going to be doing, like, some photo shoots and stuff for them as well. And I wish I had their booth number, but I don't have it. But, yeah, they've been just awesome with me so far. So I really look forward to working with that team when I get to Vegas.
Cool. Well, we definitely thank you again, and wish you the best of luck there. And I'm sure Ricky will keep us posted on what's going on, and maybe we'll get a blast out before you're going to appear out there so everybody knows how to find you.
Hey, Rich?
Yeah.
Rich, this is Ricky Vasquez. I was eavesdropping in. Shannon, did you want to tell them about the cover that you were just on and also what's going on in July for you?
Scrap Magazine. I just found out I was going to be on the cover, and they did a whole little interview. I'm glad he called me and reminded me of that, because that's, like, very recent. So, yeah, that's really exciting. They have an online magazine. So I just found out from Ricky a little bit ago that I was going to be on the cover, and shot me an email with the interview and stuff, and it's really good and definitely going to help my name get out there even more. And then, of course, in July we'll be with the UFC Expo with Ranger Up.
Scrap Magazine, is that what it is?
Scrap Magazine.
S-C-R-A-P?
P. Two P's.
Two P's. Cool. Wow, it's definitely a big step up, I guess.
Cover of magazine is always a good thing. Maxim is coming out with a Salute the Troops magazine as well, and they called me up 2 days ago and did an interview on me, so I'm actually going to have a 4-page spread in the Salute the Troops magazine with Maxim at the end of July.
Awesome. Well, that's actually something we'd have in common then, because I have actually a picture published in Maxim, not of myself, of course, but
I took a picture at a... Model?
Not yet.
Some long-term goals for you?
I need to hire an agent for that.
Yeah.
Oh, I took a picture at the Bike Week festivities up here in Laconia. It's actually coincidentally going on right now, but there was a guy that had this setup called the Wall of Death, where you ride in this big circular, basically a wall that comes up from the floor, and it's kind of like an amusement ride, but the guy takes his motorcycle up onto the wall and rides around in circles with no harnesses or anything.
That's
and I took a picture, and it actually was a kind of a misfire of the camera because he was going so fast. But you could clearly see him in the image, and his wife was standing at the bottom of the pit with all the sponsors around her and everything, and it just came out so perfectly because you could see his image, but he was moving so fast you could actually see through him.
That's
so
crazy.
Blur. And I actually wasn't going to use the picture for the newspaper while I was working for the newspaper. And my dad said, that's the picture. You got to use that one. And I did. And then Maxim called me up and they said, we want to use that. So
that's cool. That's very cool. I really like that. I really love that team of writers, too. They're all really awesome to work with.
Yeah, that's a great magazine.
Mm-hmm. A lot of guys would agree with you.
Yeah, it's one of those magazines that that people don't have to deny that they read it for the pictures.
Yeah, that's more of a picture book, I think, than anything else.
Yeah. All right, well, definitely we'll keep track of what's going on, and Ricky will update us, I'm sure, and great talking to you.
Thank you so much for interviewing me.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Yeah. All right. Have a great night.
Semper Fi, right?
Semper Fi.
Good night. So we kind of put that big brake pedal on for the Manny Pacquiao discussion, and I have a lot to discuss there. I mean, we could go all night with what I have to say. But, I think, Tom, we were kind of, I don't know if we were cut off during what you wanted to say or before you wanted to spout off about that, but we had Tony give a little piece of his mind about your perspective.
Well, I'm sure. But, you know, it was interesting. Last night I was channel surfing, and found Harry Reid on one of the cable news channels, and Harry Reid's all up in arms about this. So for a second, I thought, well, you know, is there a chance of seeing something here? And then the announcer asked him, he says, well, Mr. Reid, what do you think could come out of this investigation? He says, well, probably nothing. And I'm thinking, well, you know, for our do-nothing Congress, what do you expect? But he came on, and he was saying how, well, I've known Dwayne Ford for years, and he's a man of integrity. Well, then, Harry, what are you going to – if you have an investigation, where are we going here with this? Because if he's a man of integrity and if his eyesight – I mean, the first thing to do, let's get him to the optometrist and let's see if there's a problem with his vision. And if there's not a problem with his vision, and if you're saying he's a man of integrity, then obviously he doesn't know what he's doing. And, you know, the scary thing about this is he is instructing – and I didn't know this. I just found this out last night. He is instructing prospective judges. I guess if you want licensed in Nevada, he is running the school. Can you imagine?
Right.
And Dwayne Ford was the guy that got – I mean, I know the scores were too close, but he was the only guy that gave Pacquiao the win, wasn't he?
No. That was Roth that gave Pacquiao the win. And then it was C.J. Ross and Ford gave it 115 to 113 for Bradley.
And Ford not only scored it wrong, but he came out afterwards and defended it, his position.
Exactly.
It's not American Idol, he said.
And he said,
you know, Bradley demonstrated better ring generalship and superior boxing. But, you know, if I was going to...
I've been in boxing for almost 20 years now. I've been in boxing... I think it's my 18th year this year, as a trainer, as a coach, as a fighter. I've been doing this show with you for 4.5 years now. I've watched a lot of fights. I've been in a lot of fights. I've trained in a tough-ass Philadelphia gym. I know boxing. And superior ring generalship and better boxing ability, I've never seen taking more punches to the face demonstrating core fucking ring generalship.
Yeah, like I tried to think of, you know, how could I justify myself if I was going to be completely sympathetic to those people who scored it for Bradley? You know, how could I even think in my mind that, you know, they had the proper perspective? And the only thing I could come up with is that, you know, Manny did do a lot of last-minute fight stealing in the last minute of the rounds, but you can only count that against him if he didn't land punches that mattered during that time and didn't land the best punches of the round.
Didn't start until 2 minutes into the round. But there were some rounds you really didn't pick it up until the last minute. But you know what? In the 2 minutes, the first 2 minutes of the round, Barry didn't do a thing.
No.
That's what he's like. If two guys don't do shit for 2 minutes and 45 seconds, and one guy for the last 15 seconds lands a couple hard shots, well, guess what? He wins.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Now, the one guy that I really respect, I actually disagreed with him for a lot of years, is Max Kellerman. I remember when Max first broke into ESPN back in the late 90s, and I used to bust on one friend of mine who actually is a dead ringer for Max Kellerman. And these were in the waning days near the retirement of Vinny Paz, who, as you know, is a personal favorite of mine. And Max Kellerman always seemed like he was ripping Vinny Paz. And I'm like, God damn, Kellerman, and then I'd go over to my friend's house where my friend Nick was. I'm like, Nick, you goddamn asshole, whatever. He's like, what did I do? I'm like, well, you look like Max Kellerman, and he's talking shit on Vinny Paz, and I'm going to yell at you.
Right.
But Max Kellerman, I've really come to respect him and his knowledge over the last 13 or so years since I've been watching him. And the one thing Max says, and I agree with this, the way he judges a round is he puts himself in there and says, who would I have rather been that round? Now, obviously, you got to look at knockdowns. You got to look, and he doesn't like say like, yeah, fighter A is kicking fighter B's ass, but fighter B went, they clashed heads and fighter A got cut. I'd rather be fighter B. No, that's not it. In terms of boxing, in terms of landed punches, damaging punches, ring culture, who would I have rather been that round? And that's who I was around. And when I heard that about 10 or so years ago, you know, that makes a lot of sense. It really makes a lot of sense. And that's how I started judging fights. And I know there was a fight that was a couple years ago that a lot of people had close. And Yano and I sometimes, we disagreed on this fight, which was the Bernard Hopkins-Winky Wright fight. I know some people had Wright winning, like, the first six rounds, and then close the last six, and what they gave it to Wright by, like, 2 points. I had it even after six, and I had Hopkins sweeping the last six, because in the last six rounds of that fight, that's who I would have rather been. He landed cleaner, harder punches. The first six rounds were, you know, back and forth. The last six rounds, Hopkins clearly won. I would have rather been Hopkins. I scored the fight 117-111, as did two of the three judges. The third judge had it 116-112, being eight rounds before. That, and I don't know, I really disagree. And I said, but you look at it this way. In the last six rounds, who would you rather been? Who'd you rather been, you know? I mean, yeah, Wright blocked some punches, but he didn't land any in return. He might have blocked some, but you know what? The fact of the matter is Hopkins was landing on flesh in that fight, and Wright wasn't. Now, I know that a little bit off target there. I'm talking about the way I judge a fight. The way I judged that fight the other night, yeah, there were some rounds that, you know, either fighter was effective until the last minute, but in the last minute, Pacquiao landed the punches. He landed the clean. And he wasn't landing like those little, like, slap shoe shine punches either. He was landing hard punches, hard, effective punches. You know, how can you not credit the guy for that?
Right. Yeah, it's definitely a lot of controversy sweeping this fight. And actually, Yano, yeah. Speaking of Yano, he actually put a thread together on Facebook, you know, what are your top 10 robberies of all time. So
yeah, I saw that.
Got people talking about, you know, all of the classic bad decisions in the sport. But
I mean, let's take another fight, for example, that gets talked about 25 years later, and that's Leonard Hagler. You know, one of the classic controversial fights. But if you go back to that fight, which was a 12-round fight, Leonard Hagler. You go back to that fight, 12-round fight, a lot of people said the worst thing that happened in that fight, that was kind of in the cusp where they were, some fights were still 15 rounds, some fights were still 12, and that fight they ended up seeing a 12-round fight. Hagler gave away the first four rounds. So after four rounds, he's already down 40-36. So basically, all Leonard has to do is win two of those last six rounds, and it's a draw. Now, in most people's eyes, Hagler won seven of the final eight rounds. But the problem is, he's already in that four-point hole. So, and Leonard was doing a lot of shoe-shining at the end of the round, and I've been trying to steal rounds. And even though in the terms of the fight, Hagler, you know, if you just lump the whole fight together and say one big 36-minute round, yeah, Hagler wins. Why? Because overall, he landed more effective punches. But the problem was, there was a lot of rounds where he did not. I'll give you another example, and it was a fight five years ago that I had a lot of in-depth discussion on with people thinking it was controversial, and it was not. That was Oscar De La Hoya Floyd Mayweather. That fight, I picked De La Hoya to win by stoppage in the 11th round. You know, and after eight rounds, as in my prediction, I had the fight even. And I had De La Hoya backing him up with the jab. And I said, if he continued to do so, I think he would have landed maybe a good left hook and, you know, and knocked Mayweather out. He stopped. So after eight rounds, I had the fight even, 76-76 or whatever it was. And then I had Mayweather winning three of the last four rounds. I had him winning, you know, 9, 10, 11. I had De La Hoya rebound and then winning as well. Now, I had friends of mine that said, Jesus Christ, that decision was horrible. Devil, how you kicked his ass. This is disgusting. And I said, well, here's the problem. I said, Devil, really, over the course of the fight, in the round he won, yes, he may have landed the cleaner, harder punches. So in the first eight rounds, when it was 4-4, yes, he may have landed some really good punches in those rounds, and the rounds Mayweather won, maybe he just better used better boxing technique. But the fact of the matter is, it's still even. So a lot of people say, Devil, who kicked his ass? Yeah, in five rounds. But you know what? Mayweather won seven. The score was 115-113 Mayweather. That was the right score. People disagreed with me. But you got to score it round by round. And the score will attack you out round. Well, actually, I'm going to say it in two ways. If you scored it round by round, you scored it the right way, 119-109 Pacquiao. If you scored it as a one big lump 36-minute round, you scored it 10-9 Pacquiao. Either way, Pacquiao wins. End of discussion.
Well,
fire.
Well, we obviously have to talk about what the theories are of how this happened with Pacquiao. And there's a lot of conspiracy theories. But what really pissed me off more than anything is these idiots, these absolute idiots in the media. Guys like Kevin Ioli, number one, who writes for Yahoo somehow and gets all this money and just constantly talks out of his ass. And all these people who came out. And all these people who came out in the traditional boxing media and flat out before even Floyd Mayweather had a chance to say a word himself, or any of his family even came out and said anything about the fight, they all just immediately concluded that because of this loss, Floyd Mayweather is never going to fight Manny Pacquiao. And it's just complete bullshit. They have nothing to base that on. And then, lo and behold, you know, I wrote that, hey, you know, we have to wait on that. And if the public perception and the media perception is Manny got screwed, there's no reason that loss should prevent that fight because people are still going to want to see it. And what do you know? Roger Mayweather said the exact same thing the other day. He said, if people want to see that fight, it's still going to happen. If people perceive that as a robbery, then we can still make that fight. Jeff Mayweather and Floyd Mayweather Sr. came out. They said Manny Pacquiao won that fight. And they're guys who could be considered to be a little biased against Pacquiao.
Right.
So, I mean, in the same breath, they said he didn't look good, but they thought he won the fight. So to all those people out there who think, oh, I'm going to sell headlines by saying the fight's never going to happen and act like, oh, you know, you're God's greatest gifts to the boxing writers out there, you know, do your freaking homework. Call the guy's lawyer or something. See if he can get an official statement or even a denial of a statement before you go out and say something's never going to happen and just write to sell headlines or whatever. I mean, just baffles my mind. And the same thing happens in MMA. I mean, look at Brock Lesnar has a horrible meeting with Dana White. Comes out 2 weeks later, nothing came of it. But during that whole time before and after that meeting, everybody's talking about who Brock is going to fight next in the UFC. He's not coming back, folks. You know, get your facts straight.
Hey, what about the comments? What about the comments of Bob Arum? I found that kind of interesting too. You know, he comes in afterwards and he's acting like he's shocked, but then he turns around and says, "Well, at least I'll make $50 million from the rematch." And you know.
Right.
Oh, the 800-pound gorilla.
Say, what more could you say to make yourself look like you planned this?
Yeah, exactly. And what I'm thinking, you know, you can't say for sure what happened, but you got to wonder if he just feels, well, I'm so covered and this thing's so buried and layered that I can come out and demand an investigation. But, you know, this may be the best thing if Pac-Man can get away from him for seeing the Mayweather fight. So I would agree with you all the way on that.
There was another thing that the press jumped the gun on, because according to him, I've heard anywhere between he has 1.5 to 3 years left on Manny's contract. So the fact that people were out there saying that his contract is running out with Pacquiao, they were off base too. And these are major media people going out and saying that. And at least when I put my comments together, I went back to Manny's former promoter, Murad Muhammad. And he had actually come out publicly before this fight and said that Bob Arum wanted Pacquiao to lose because Pacquiao is asking for too much money per fight. And Bradley is a young up-and-comer, and he actually commented recently in a BoxingScene.com article, and he at the end of the article, Bradley's quoted saying, "I just checked my bank account this morning, and I couldn't believe how many zeros were there. It made it all worth it, even with what they're saying. My bank account is fat." So this guy loves it, you know, and he's getting paid a fraction of what Manny's getting paid. To fight in this kind of a stage where he's never been before. So just a tremendous boost for Bob Arum if he can market this guy and pay him less and make him happy with what he's making him happy with. And, you know, who knows if he couldn't set Bradley up to fight Floyd Mayweather, which is what Floyd Mayweather would probably prefer, you know, based on this fight in particular, because you know, Bradley supposedly won this fight on two bad wheels.
Well,
I mean, it's crazy.
And you have to wonder how
get away with that.
You have to wonder how long people will keep going for the pay-per-views for this, though. You know, maybe if the next time, and I know I say this all the time, but maybe if the next time we say we are not going to eat the slop that Arum's putting on our plate, but he knows that we will. And I don't know what the answer is to it. You know, Keith Kaiser comes out and says, well, we're not going to look into this at all. Well, why do we have a commission? I mean, what is wrong with Keith Kaiser calling each one of those judges into his office and saying, now we are going to watch this and we're going to break it down round for round, and you are going to explain to me exactly what you are seeing and why you called it the way you did. Why would that be controversial?
It wouldn't, and it shouldn't be, but, you know, just it's the way that he just did not appear at all concerned was the worst part for me.
None.
And, you know, Nevada, Las Vegas in particular, has a very rich history of mafia and mafioso controlling the boxing situation in particular. In the public eye, but, you know, definitely ingrained in the history of boxing going back decades, so...
Yeah, just Google Frankie Carbo, Blinky Palermo, and you know, all these guys. It's just unbelievable.
And the thing that really kind of made me wonder whether maybe Bob Arum might be telling the truth about his denials was there was one poker expert who came out, and they quoted him on Twitter in one of the articles that I read, and he cited the fact that there was a ton of late bets coming in for Timothy Bradley, which could just be people, you know, having a moment where they're like, well, you know, fight's coming up, I got to make my bet, you know, might as well make the bet that's 5-1 odds. But could also be corruption involved there, and I would not put it above the organized crime circles to plan this that way and go directly to the judges. Because, you know, in the scrutiny that these guys get in this day and age, as much as I'd love to throw Bob Arum under the bus and as much as I think he's a scumbag in general, you know, maybe it was just a perfect storm.
It's quite possible. I would agree.
Just screwed it up. You know, that's the thing that really kills me is that we'll probably never know the real reason why this happened. And in the same breath, we'll never really recover from it unless they do something. And, you know, I'm sick of, too, the people saying that boxing is dead because of this. It's going to lose a lot of fans, granted. A lot of people have already said, I'm not watching it again. This is crazy. But it's generating so much controversy and so many people talking about decisions that, in the reality, it's actually probably going to help boxing, believe it or not.
That's an interesting perspective. Yeah.
And the thing that really kind of made me think about it was, you know, how can we fix it? You know, they used to have news reporters that put in the decision, or put in a card for a decision. You read the old boxer records, you see, you know, news decision on some of them.
Well,
so,
what about open scoring? I mean, we have that in every other sport. Right after the round, the judges' scores are available for everyone to see. What would be wrong with that?
They tried that. They actually tried that. WBC, I think, did that before.
The only thing that really hurts that, I mean, and in a situation like this, it's hard to argue against, but it takes away, like, a lot of the drama of it. Or it takes it where, you know, you have a close fight, and, like, say, there's two fighters out there, the fight is close, but so-and-so knows he's up by 2 points going into the final round. Well, mm-hmm. most likely he's going to think, shit, I'm just going to give up that 1 point. I'm just going to pull a De La Hoya Trinidad here and just pretty much run and not give a shit about losing a point, where if the fight's maybe close, it'll be maybe a little bit more competitive and exciting in the final round. You know?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's the answer, but one of the solutions I came up with is actually might work, was why not let the officials at ringside get a hold of the punch stat numbers after every round. Technology is such that we can get it on TV in a second. Give it to the judges. I mean, that really told the story for most news outlets and most people watching on SportsCenter about the fight, the punch stat numbers. They obviously favored Manny Pacquiao. If you give that to the judges and they see that and still make that call that he didn't win that fight, then there's something wrong with boxing, you know, then it's obvious that the fight was fixed. But without that, and with them able to say it was their subjective opinion and they can justify it by just saying, well, this is the fight that I saw, you know, why not? Why not give them an unbiased a set of numbers that describes how the fight's going, just in case they miss something, you know, because Pacquiao was throwing punches so fast and so hard, which is his style, that they could have really missed something. And that's one of the things that sucks about the way the judging is set up too, is the vantage point is the other thing. These guys are sitting, so they're looking up under the ropes at these guys. You know, why not have them in a position where they can see the fight better? Give them monitors, actually, is something that the UFC tried. I'm not sure, you know, how that experiment's been working for them, but they had a couple bad decisions. They gave the judges monitors so that they could see the fight better. And it wouldn't hurt to have the HBO set up, or, like, for this fight, if they had the between-round highlights with the volume turned down so the guys couldn't hear the commentary favoring one fighter or another, but just show the replays to these guys.
Yeah.
Why can't they sit there and watch that between rounds? But something simple could be done to make sure this kind of crap doesn't happen again. And I think the punch stat number thing would be the easiest way to go. Because how can you really screw up based on that? I don't think you can.
Well, we can
round by round.
I guess we can only hope something good will come out of it, and
right.
And maybe with these kind of suggestions, maybe the atmosphere is right. And then Harry Reid was also saying that him and Senator McCain have been talking for years, like Teddy Atlas does every week, about a national commission, a federal commission. But I'm sure there's some downsides there too. So I don't know. There's no easy answers here.
If you're going to do that, then, you know, you have to have more power involved. And right now, like Harry Reid said, there's probably nothing that you can do to overturn this. Now the WBO actually came out and said, we're going to have 5 scorers look at this fight, but we're not going to strip the belt. So what the hell is the point?
Yeah, exactly.
I came up with the analogy of, like, that's like editing out the swears in a porno movie.
Right. I mean, yeah, tell us something we don't know. Tell us something we don't know. Gee, well, we disagree with that. You know, we had 5 officials review it, and they disagreed. Okay, where do we go from here? We know the problem. We need solutions.
Yeah, and how are you going to overturn something that happens like that in the future? And if you don't overturn it, then how are you going to say that, you know, boxing can grow and learn from this? You know, I think that's where we need to be at the end of all this, once the rematch is in the books and we figured out, you know, who really is the best fighter. You know, at that point, we really have to take advantage of, you know, an effort or an opportunity there to really repair the sport and have something done to prevent this again. And you know, you look at this Nevada Commission, as much as I hate to say it, you know, Keith Kaiser really can't do anything. What's he going to do? And why should he take the state's money and do an investigation that, by the traditional, you know, rules and customs of boxing right now, nothing can really be done about? I mean, if they overturn this fight the way the rules are currently written, how many boxers would have lawsuits in the books because their fights weren't overturned?
Well,
and it's like one of those sad cases of when the game is over, the game is over, like in baseball. When you have
maybe he could look at this under like a competency thing. You know, like I said, if he would really try to find out or try to figure out what they were thinking, and if, in his opinion, you're not fit to be a judge.
Right.
I don't know if there's any precedent for that either.
There's definitely some hint made about the judges' ages too. I think both judges who scored it for Bradley were over 70. Not being ageist there.
No. I understand, and you can argue that both ways. You could say on the one hand that anyone that's been around that long should have the experience. You can use your experience as a yardstick. It should make you better. But on the other hand, if we're looking at the neurological deterioration of some ages, but the point being, there should be some standards. I mean, it just you just can't pick three people out of the crowd and say, do this job. It's just so unfair.
Right.
You know, to the fighters especially, let alone the fans and the, you know, the trainers and everyone else with the stake in this thing. But, frustration.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a situation, though. If you're going to look at the bare facts of the situation, it's a setup where really the only thing you can hope for is something to be put in place so the future fights like this don't get scored wrong. You can't wind the clock back for some reasons the way it's set up now. And as much as I wish we could and you know, give Pacquiao the win, really the best thing that could have happened to remedy this situation won't ever happen. That's Bradley giving the belt back to Pacquiao as a symbolic gesture. Just saying, I refuse this belt. You know, that would be the class act thing to do. He's already got his money. He doesn't have to give his money back. You know, he's already got to deal with the press and the public saying that he didn't win that fight. And as much heart as he showed by being in there with two broken, you know, wheels, he would be a hero in the eyes of everybody if he did that. And he's already, you know, kind of getting shortchanged just for the effort. Because of the controversy.
Sure, but if you put yourself in his shoes, though, he's going to say, "Well, hey, I'm not the judge. I'm not one of the judges." So.
Yeah, he sort of actually said that. Funny you mentioned that. The Boxing Scene article that I cited before, he says Bob Arum doesn't have anything to do with this. Neither do I, and neither does Pacquiao. The judges scored the fight how they saw it, so everyone else needs to stop blaming us. They should take it up with the judges, not with Top Rank, not with me, not with Pacquiao. And the thing about Pacquiao, too, that kind of made this seem a little bit sketchy was he was smiling. He's out there wearing a Victory 55 T-shirt, confident that he won. And he's smiling in the interviews. Like, it's no big deal that he just got screwed. And then you add to the fact that there was posters and a ticket made up for the rematch before the fight even happened. And, you know, it's like I said, a perfect storm for people to come up with, you know, conspiracy theories and you know, it's just so much doubt about what really happened. And it's really unfortunate, too, because it overshadowed the rest of the fights that night. Randall Bailey had a hell of a knockout comeback.
The two fighters that lost on that undercard, I've met both of them. They're the Philadelphia guys. I don't know either of them particularly well. I met Keon Kennedy one time. He actually fought on the card that I went to a few years ago where Chuck Musaccio was fighting on there against Richard Stewart. And that was the one where Chucky fought in the co-feature, winning an eight-round decision, and Keon fought the main event, and he scored it. It was the first and second round stoppage. He looked really impressive. The one thing that really concerned me about Keon was about a year after that is when he had that fight at the Blue Horizon where his opponent Francisco Paco Rodriguez passed away a couple of days later. It was a good clean fight, you know. It wasn't a mismatch. Both guys were it was nip and tuck till about the 10th round, and that's when Keon broke through and Rodriguez passed away a couple of days later. And he lost. Like almost immediately, like his next fight after that, he lost his first career loss, and it was almost like you could just tell it was almost like the Boom Boom Mancini syndrome. You could tell there was just a little bit of spark missing, and he was up against an exceptional Cuban fighter in Guillermo Rigondeaux, and he really didn't get hurt until about the 5th round. I mean, Rigondeaux knocked him down about 4 or 5 times before he finally put him down. And you could tell he was really hurt the last time. He buckled pretty hard. But other than that, but, you know, even Kennedy might be having a good round, Next thing you know, boom, 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 Rigondeaux was so fast and so sharp that the punches were just knocking him down. And then that led to the stoppage. Then we had the fight between Mike Jones and Randall Bailey. And the one thing I said last week on the show, Rich, you know, Mike Jones, who I've met, and his trainer is a friend of a coworker of mine. His trainer, Danny Davis, also was doing all the things in Ring Magazine, the tutorials of Bernard Hopkins for a couple of years. I think the first punch of the fight, which is was basically the missile of a Bailey right hand that missed, I think that scared Jones a little bit because Jones became so tentative. It almost looked like, you know, like every muscle on his body was tight. You know, he wasn't relaxed. And Bailey being, you know, a 37-year-old fighter, you know, he doesn't have the great legs anymore. Another thing about Bailey is I've seen him get hurt with body punches. A lot of guys are afraid to hit him to the body because of the fact that, you know, he can blast you with that right hand. John David Jackson, Bailey's trainer, Bailey's trainer was getting very frustrated with him. Because Jones wasn't pressing the action, and Bailey was
up to the cut man. The cut man started yelling, "You got to go out there and whip his ass!"
the cut man's giving him a pep talk, and then the one thing that ended up being really interesting was we talked about a couple of years ago, one of our former guests, El Gato, when he had that fight on ESPN against Bailey, and Bailey destroyed him with a single right hand. That was always the threat in that fight. And then especially Jones wasn't making him work enough, so he wasn't, you know, making him use, you know, his legs. He wasn't going to the body.
Too, by the way.
Yeah, the fight was not exciting for the last round. And when the fight got exciting, that was the beginning of the end for Jones. The first knockdown in the 10th round, like 5 seconds ago, Jones was like, "Oh, this is Jones' best round. He's not real good." Bam. And he, like, literally, it was like he got shot out of a cannon the way he went down so fast. And he got up, and if you look closely, it looked like he was bouncing right up. He stumbles just a little bit. You could tell, I mean, he was stunned. Goes back to the corner, and for the most part, he was having a good 11th round. It might have been his best round of the fight. And I remember, was it Kellerman who said it maybe? Kellerman or Emmanuel Stewart was like, "Oh, my God, Jones is really picking it up. He's got him if he keeps doing this, he's going to stop him." And within 5 seconds, go back and watch the tape. It was almost within 5 seconds of him saying that, he threw that jab and Bailey sidestepped it beautifully and came on the inside of with that uppercut. And you could see Jones, like, fell down like a tree, and his eyes were rolling as he's falling. And before he even hit the ground, blood was pouring out of his nose. He was out.
Bloody mucus, his brain matter.
Yeah, it was.
Pretty bad.
And the first thing it reminded me of, I was talking to my boss at work on Monday when I got there, and we were kind of bullshitting about, you know, not just the main event, but, you know, the other fights on the card. And I told him the time, and I remember I told you on the air the time I was in a sparring session, and the guy kept trying to pick up the pace. And I finally countered him with a left hook, and the trainer was like, "Jesus Christ, get me a towel." And I stabbed my own nose. He goes, "No, it's not you." I looked at him, the guy was just cascading blood. That's what it was like, because that's how fast. The same thing with James, like how fast the guy was just pouring. And
there's better undercard fights I've seen in a while. I mean, I wasn't really paying much attention to the first part of the fight, but I kind of tuned in and locked on right when Bailey started making his moves, and listening to the commentators talk about how he was down on points, and then hearing that cut man go off, you got to go out and whip his ass. It's one thing I like about watching the fights that are on cable TV. You get to hear all the graphic language in the corner. It was no shortage of that in every corner for that night. Of all the fights, I think these guys were just truck driver language.
I'll start with one of the funniest ones I think I ever remember, and it was by chance we were talking about him earlier, Vinny Paz, back in '99. Now, yes, in the fights I'm sure that Max Kellerman was ripping him on. That's why I had to go yell at my friend Nick, but he was he's fighting. Oh, I'm trying to remember the guy's name. Joseph Chiwanuka. Chiwanuka was actually starting to really dominate everybody. But then he had a bad loss about a year prior, and it really shook his confidence. So it ended up being a pretty good fight, and Paz just attacked him. He just negated his, height and weight disadvantages by just blasting out of the corner like he shot, just blasting right out of there, and he attack. And there was a couple of headbutts in the fight. So, I mean, Vinny, for the most part, even though he was winning almost every round, he was bleeding pretty bad. Now, I remember them sitting him down in the one corner. And Kevin Rooney's there. He's fired up. And Vinny's father, Angelo, who was just, the stereotypical, Italian guy. What the fuck are you doing? Jesus Christ. He was just a ball of fire, And everybody, this motherfucker's headbutting, this motherfucker. And it's on ESPN, and it's not getting edited. And I just remember him going back, and it was like Teddy Atlas was like, I don't know if he was just Brian Kenny back then, maybe. And they're like, we apologize if you think you just tuned in to an episode of The Sopranos.
Definitely a great fight. And the other thing that got overshadowed by this whole controversy was the recent Hall of Fame inductions into the Hall of Fame. And actually, two of the guys that were at the fight got on a private plane and had to go right from Las Vegas to Syracuse to attend the ceremony. And that was Freddie Roach and Michael Buffer got inducted.
Yeah.
And actually, one of the guys we've had on our show, Al Bernstein, was one of the guys.
I remember Taylor Geisler, who I'm a Facebook friend with, had a picture of Al Bernstein, signing a hat there. And Al had, just a 1,000-watt smile on his face. And I remember when we interviewed Al, just about a year and a half ago now, I grew up watching a lot of ESPN fights. And I always liked Al Bernstein and Barry Tompkins as a commentary pair. I remember growing up and, I was too young for the Cosell age. I was obviously too young for the Don Dumpy age. There were two guys that pretty much did the calls on their own. But I remember some of the classic tandems, growing up, Sean O'Grady and Al Albert on USA. And then you had Barry Tompkins and Al Bernstein on ESPN. I know even for Showtime for a while before his untimely passing, was a Steve Farhood and Nick Charles. And when we had the opportunity to interview Steve Farhood, the one thing I told him was I liked them as a tandem as much as I liked Bernstein and Thompson, because you could just tell they were knowledgeable, but they were not where you felt like you were inferior to them. For certain people you listen to, they almost talked down to an audience. And they make you feel almost inferior. I'm not going to mention any names. Even Howard Cosell was like that. Howard Cosell, he had a flair for the dramatic, but he could make you feel inferior. I told Al Bernstein, I said, I liked growing up listening to you because, I felt like I was being taught, but at the same time, I didn't feel like I was being taught. I didn't feel like I was being talked to. I felt I was being involved in a discussion. And Al was always smooth, always very much a gentleman. I loved having him on the show. And when Al Bernstein said to me on our show, I had made a point, and he goes, you know what? He goes, what you just said is 100% correct. And he goes, you know, I agree with you. For having someone with, you know, his stature, he's a Hall of Famer, his stature and his experience basically telling me that a lot of the points I'm making are dead on and he agrees with them. That was a, you know, a highlight to me. I think that was the
point. Yeah, it was really cool, too, to actually meet him in person at the Floyd Mayweather open workout before the Ortiz fight. And, you know, I got a great picture of him getting ready to interview Floyd while he's getting his hands wrapped. And just the crush of press was, you know, one of the things that I really took away from the meeting. But before all the press really, you know, got into a frenzy and before Floyd even stepped into the room, I had a little bit of a second to say hi to Al when he was watching some of the other guys on the card working out. And he remembered the interview right off the bat. You know, he said, oh, yeah. You know, we talked for a couple minutes, shook my hand. Just a regular guy, you know. And you know, good to see that and, you know, get that honor under his belt. Also on the stage out there in Canastota, New York, we had the Thomas the Hitman Hearns, Mark Too Sharp Johnson, and Michael Katz. We're all inducted as well. Freddie Roach, of course, comes from my area where I grew up in Massachusetts. And there's actually a video out there of Freddie and his brother boxing when they were really young with a guy named Iron Mike Pusateri, who recently passed away, I think a couple years ago now, or a year ago, unfortunately. But, no, that was a goodie. Different guy. Gym and actually he even worked with Mark Wahlberg to get him ready for the fighter and stuff. So just a class act type of guy and one of the most interesting things I ever saw or heard about Freddie was when he did a CNN thing with Piers Morgan there and they were at the Wild Card Gym and Piers actually did a little sparring with Manny Pacquiao. But he asked Freddie something about the Parkinson's and you know how he can get in there with these fighters and you know overcome the Parkinson's. And Freddie actually told him, you know, when I go into the ring, I don't have Parkinson's. It goes away, which is kind of fascinating to me, you know, because I'm one of those guys that's a kind of a health buff, and you know I like to do my own research here and there into the natural ways to heal certain diseases and stuff. So that really blew my mind that, you know, just doing what you love could take away a degenerative condition.
You know, I asked him a few months ago that I fight him in Philadelphia. You know, he was after the fight's over, he's taking a lot of pictures, you know, with the fans and everything. And it was almost like and like I said, I got my picture with him. It was Freddie standing there, and as you know, the next person would be coming up, and he'd be shaking. Do you got Prince to step up there and he'd go for the photo? No shake. You know? You could tell he was, it almost looked like he was like relaxed. I don't know. I've seen times that he'd be in the locker room, you know, getting ready to get Manny Pacquiao ready to fight. And he's sitting there shaking. He throws his pads on, or they walk into the ring, and there's none. You know? And you're right. Maybe it is, you know, like a, you know, just a personal healing.
Yeah, I've always been one of those people that thinks that there's a natural cure for anything that medicine tries to invent. It's actually a classic report I just saw the other day. I think it was, it might have been earlier today, but they come out with this report now that says the common cold might cure cancer. Can you believe that? They injected the common cold into people with cancer, and it provided the immune response necessary to kill off the cancer cells.
Wow. That's pretty amazing, you know?
Yeah.
I worked in medical market research for a lot of years, medical education, setting up medical events and everything like that. I was more of like a coordinator. But I remember, like, all the different things, like, that pharmaceutical medicine can do, which some of them are frankly amazing. But then it's like, you know, my father, he loved herbal medicine. Rich, you and him would have a great discussion. Like, I know when we used to get out of the gym in South Philly, he would take that product, Arnica berries.
Yeah.
And he, now, Arnica, you can get, you can get a cube of the shit and, like, you know, some health food stores and everything. And it's good for bruising, good for sprains, good for shit like that. But my dad used to make it out of actual berries. And he'd get the berries, he'd strain them, and then he would make a concoction with wintergreen and Vaseline intensive care. And he'd turn it into a cream. And I remember nights down the gym, falling with my trainer one night, and he went to throw a body shot. I blocked it with my elbow and bruised his entire forearm. We put the wintergreen on it, and not the wintergreen, the arnica on it, and within a day it was gone. My dad loves reading about the juicing and everything. And what's great now is I'm on week 2 of DDP yoga. I'm loving it. Hey, Rich, thank you for getting him on as a guest, because I've been doing the yoga for 2 weeks now. I've been having some back spasms tonight, which is an old foot injury from 95. I wrote about it on Facebook. but overall, I've been stretching a lot. I never believe I can get my heart rate up like I am and so quickly, without doing anything yourself, without being cardiovascular. I do it in the morning. Like right now, I'm still on the first two videos, the energy, and then I did the fat burner once, which I'm going to do again tomorrow. I'll wake up, I'll start in about 20, 30 minutes after waking up, and usually my heart rate's at about 89 to 90 when I start. And within 5 minutes, I've had my monitor. It's been up in the 120s. Yesterday I had it up in the 130s. And that was doing the energy workout, which is not as intense as the fat burner workout that I'm doing tomorrow. So tomorrow I think I'll be spending most of my 25 minutes in the high 120s to 130s, maybe even touching 140. I'm even trying to eat better now. You can still treat yourself a little bit. Tonight I went out, had a Philadelphia water ice, which was very delicious. But overall, I'm more fruits and more vegetables. And what I invented yesterday, which my boss wasn't too happy about, was, I wanted to get something really good with protein. So I made a scrambled egg with black beans in them and fat-free mozzarella cheese. Really good. And then it was great because we had an office downstairs at my building that two of our supervisors had pretty much sequestered themselves in to make all these route changes. So every time the branch manager would go down there to check on them or ask them questions, I would sneak into his office and fart. I was actually the one boss and I was at the Philadelphia Phillies fan, and we were watching a game last night, which was, it was around 11 o'clock, and we're damn near blowing the lead. And he and I were texting each other, like, what the fuck's going on there, Jesus Christ? And then I'm like, oh, by the way, I shouldn't really tell you this, but I made this new breakfast of scrambled eggs, black beans, and mozzarella cheese. And I said, every time Fran went down in the office to check on you guys today, I went in his office and used my personal farting sanctuary. He said, that's the funniest fucking thing I've ever heard. Oh, my God, that's great. So I went in his chair and I'm like, hey, Bob, I think tomorrow I'm going to have the scrambled eggs and black beans again.
Well, getting back to the combat sports discussion here, I know we haven't talked about MMA yet, but we do have one more boxing story to discuss. I definitely wanted to mention. I'm going to probably do a good story on this, but it's going to be like an open letter to Floyd Mayweather. But he just got rejected for his bid to get out of jail free card, I guess. Wanted to do house arrest instead of dealing with the conditions there at the prison. fight again, and he's not eating, and he's not doing exercise because he's not.
Mike Tyson was in prison for 3 years. Mike Tyson was in prison for 3 years. He came back within a matter of months. Wasn't the same, but he's still pretty goddamn good. Bret Hopkins is in jail for 5 years.
How about Reuben Hurricane Carter, who was in jail for like 30 years for a crime that he didn't even commit? You know, Floyd stuck it out.
Yeah, granted, I will give you that. Or that guy that just fought on the Hopkins undercard a few months ago, that dude was out.
Yeah.
He was in jail for a crime he didn't commit for 27 years. He comes out at 52 years old, he makes his third ADO. I can understand, you know, in the prison it's not easy or whatever, but there are guys that have had more than 3 months prison stint that got out, got themselves back in. You know what? Yeah, you're not going to be in the prime shape that you were in when you went in. But of course, you're not going to be doing all the same work after all. But don't give me that fucking shit. Oh my God, I've been in there for 3 months and it's ruined my life. I'm in shape. Before, always in tremendous shape. Go running at midnight like you like to do. Do your setup workouts. Do your bullshit pad work that I think is atrocious. And he'll be ready to fight again, and then if he gets out in August, he'll be ready to fight again by January.
Yeah. And one thing we didn't talk about with the Pacquiao situation, too, is that actually it came out that he was going to fight Marquez on November 10th if this rematch didn't become a factor. November 10th was already locked in, and he was going to fight Marquez. That was the plan, so... They weren't grooming that Mayweather fight, at least for this year, even if Pacquiao won. But it's going to be interesting to find out what Floyd thinks. I'm sure he's gotten word now how the fight ended. And you'd think he would have found a way to get word out to the street on how he thinks about it, because the guy loves being quoted. He loves the press. He loves to, you know, put his little tweets out here and there. So I'm really surprised that he hasn't said anything, unless he's on one of those refusing to talk to the press moods or something. I don't know. But it's kind of crazy that he would even ask for this. And, you know, the fact that he got such a light sentence to begin with and so much consideration for what he did. His wife and kids actually don't even live in Nevada anymore, and that's probably has a lot to do with that incident. You know, they moved to California, so, I mean, it was a big deal, and he threatened to basically, you know, kill his kids almost, I think, at some point in the confrontation, or he said that, you know, you better not tell anybody about this, and so he's actually threatening his kids, not only the wife, whatever happened with the girlfriend, I should say. I don't think it was his wife, but it's just a tremendous... arrogance to go out and commit a crime like that and then try to get leniency after you've been sentenced. You know,
just be humble for once
in your life.
Yeah.
Be humble for once in your life. Now, I've never done three months in jail, but I can guarantee you if I had done something like that, I would look at it as a gift if I had to serve 3 months.
You definitely could. That's what I said he did,
So hopefully he gets over his crybaby routine and, you know, figures something out and doesn't use this as an excuse in the future. I really do think that Mayweather-Pacquiao fight is going to happen. It's going to happen in 2013. And, you know, Mayweather's whole family is out there saying that Pacquiao won the fight. And actually, Roger was the only one who didn't see the fight. Probably seen it by now, but he actually skipped the fight to spend time with his kids, so... That was kind of an interesting thing to hear him come out and debunk all these guys that said that fight's never going to happen. But give it time. Boxing will, you know, survive. Like Teddy Atlas said in our interview, when I interviewed him, he said, boxing has died a million times. I've been to too many funerals. Oh, it's not going to just disappear as a sport, no matter what controversy happens. It's just too ingrained in our culture and in the world history, and it's one of those sports that when people compare to MMA, they always call MMA the fastest growing sport in the world. But no matter how fast MMA is growing, it's never going to outpace the infrastructure that boxing has right now. And now that we've discussed boxing, almost.
Well, one thing, Rich. One thing we haven't touched on is Kelly Pavlik. Anyone have any comments on him?
That's one of those things I haven't even had time to even look at anything about. I do know that I think he won his fight, right?
Yeah. Yes. And as Tony accurately predicted, though, Sigmund was he hung in there. I mean, it was Kelly was winning every round, but I don't know. It's hard to say. I'm kind of mixed on it. Because I was able to see it and. He definitely won every round, but, you know, the question is, was he carrying the guy? Because I guess there was some bad blood there. And this Sigmund's nickname was Cujo, which I believe was an old Stephen King movie. If you remember The Mad Dog, I found that kind of interesting, you know. But Kelly does, you know, he did say in the after-fight interview that he knows he has to step it up. So I'd say he's probably at least, though, one or two fights away from something really serious. But he's hoping he can get something in the top five or at least in the top 10 in his next fight. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Oh, and another thing, too, I forgot to mention about the Pacquiao situation. I'm going to run something by you guys now. If I said the date of the fight, 6-9, was an indication that someone was getting screwed, you guys think that's funny, number one, or would you think it's offensive?
No, that's good. That's good. That's real good.
Well, I got fired basically from a free site, Bleacher Report, for writing that in the second sentence of one of my stories, and then after they took it out, I put it back because they said it was offensive, not only offensive but obscene. That's obscene. Can you believe that?
Yeah, well, I will report. Then we'll see what obscene really is. Actually, you see my writing. I actually write, you know, relatively professional. It's usually when I get on the show, I usually become sometimes foul-mouthed.
Yeah, and I mean, that wasn't even a swear. Screwed. Everybody uses the word screwed to talk about somebody who got, shortchanged in a sporting event.
I think that was nature's way of telling you didn't belong at that place in the first place, you know.
I guess so. But, you know, it still kind of made me think, like, you know, it really made me take a look at some of the guys on that site who get paid and who are submitting everything that's getting put out there. And all the articles that I put on that website, I was marketing primarily by myself to get all the hits on. And these are guys getting a free ride from this site because they have a huge mailing list, and they're getting all these people to look at their articles, and they're not even creative, you know, and they're getting put into these cookie cutter situations where the editors are making every article look the same way. And I mean, it's one of those sites too that's really got a lot of MMA connections and kind of drives some of the topics and discussions in MMA. So it's kind of sad that we get guys like that who are getting paid, and then people like me working for free just because I make a joke. You know, they don't want to hear from me anymore.
Yeah.
Screw that. But there's better things to discuss, so let's get into MMA for a minute. We had the UFC on FX3 card, and as I said that last week, that, you know, I probably wasn't going to be that enthralled by the main event, and I don't think anybody was. The second fight was kind of like the first. It was, I think, a little bit more obviously Demetrius Johnson's fight, but it wasn't very entertaining from my perspective.
Yeah, I agree, but I think you called it pretty good. But I thought the undercard was well.
Yeah, the undercard was nice. There was a couple early submissions. Eric Silva beat Charlie Brennan by rear naked choke. That was a good fight. Josh Neer got just demolished by a straight right hand that came out of nowhere from Mike Pyle, knocked out in the first round, and that's something. I mean, I've seen Josh Neer in person down in Iowa and met him and stuff, and never expected to see him go out like that. So.
Yeah, that was, and you know, that was the kind of fight. Sometimes you don't make a mistake. I mean, because I don't think Neer really did anything wrong. He had him hurt. moved in, and it looked like Powell was out of it, and that right hand just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, and fell face down. That's like the worst part.
I was pulling for Nir a bit because when he fought Forrest Pettis about 6 years ago, I helped Forrest get ready for it. Well, I mean, I was more like Forrest's punching bag and grappling dummy, but, you know, hey, tough job. Someone's got to do it, you know. But I always was kind of, you know, he beat my training partner, but I'd like to see him, you know, succeed. And I thought he was doing great. I mean, he had the round on my card, you know. And we noticed we had that bit of a heel hook battle, but we're not seeing too many leg locks anymore like we used to. But, yeah, I just think he just ran into it. What can you say? I just got caught.
Yeah.
And then how about Wineland? You know, there's an old cliche: his defense was his offense. You know, because he had that box. You know, his hands were down at his chest. He was protecting his chest pretty good, but hey, he pulled it off. It ain't bragging if you can do it, you know.
Yeah, he took out Scott Jorgensen in the second round there. Complete knockout there.
Yeah, and so you know, you kind of hate to see something end with a cut. I was glad that didn't stop it, you know, from the fighter's standpoint. You guys know how that is. I mean, that sometimes it looks worse than it is, and you just hate to see it stop like that. But fortunately, it wasn't.
Yeah, actually, there was a fight not too long ago with Strikeforce heavyweight tournament, I think, or no, the one where guy from Strikeforce, Bigfoot Silva, came over and made his debut in the UFC and got cut open by an elbow, and it was so bad that it was like a pool of blood in the middle of the mat, and his trainers and his corner team there actually said after the fight that they wanted to ban those type of grounded elbows because of that cut. MMA is actually one of those sports that's a little too young to have enough statistics to figure out, you know, how people get injured and stuff. But one of the reports that I saw very early on was indicative that these guys suffer way more concussions per capita than they do in boxing, because boxing is more of a repetitive strike deal where, you know, you're taking punches over 12 rounds, where these guys are getting different points of contact slamming into their heads, and whether they're getting these huge cuts or concussions, you know, they're definitely feeling the after effects of these fights a little bit more. And one of the things that's kind of created recently, like I talked about earlier with our guest, is an injury bug that's just catastrophic for the UFC. And that's another thing I want to write an article about one of these days. You know, I already talked about the tough schedule, but when guys are dropping out of fights just from normal training routines and training camps and stuff, and they have months and months to prepare for a fight, and they're not able to fight, it should tell you something about not only the actual competition, but the training environment for these guys that they're dealing with. And to still know that these guys are getting paid so much less than boxers, and, you know, especially with the success of the UFC, even though they're kind of having some growing pains right now, it's just disgusting. And actually, when I looked back and I saw that the salaries for the tough card, most guys made around $8,000 base pay, and that was it. You know, it just blew my mind.
Yeah, at UFC 100, my friend Forrest Pettis fought on that card too, and he was on the one of the prelims, and it was $6,000 to show, $6,000 to win. So if you don't get fight of the night or knockout of the night or submission of the night, they're not making much.
And actually, Dana White came out and said that he blames the fighters for not toning it down in camp. Like, you know, that's going to solve the problem. Oh, you got to tone it down. And then I saw another article where one writer theorized that these guys are reporting injuries more now because of the health insurance. So because they know they can get it taken care of, they're not afraid to pull out of fights and deal with it now, whereas before they, you know, they'd have to get paid to fix it, so they would hide an injury.
Well, I don't know what Dana would suggest. I mean, you can't go in there and do point. I mean, you know, it's a fine line. I think if you get in 100%, maybe you haven't trained hard enough, but you don't want to get in at 50% either. Then you've left your fight in the gym, you know. So, you know, and this is fascinating that we're talking about all these injuries, because remember in the early days, the theory was boxing was more brutal because you have the continual punishment, and the culture in boxing is you can't tap out. I mean, ask Roberto Duran about Nomas. whereas every night, and you know, you see tap out, and what's the difference from Nomas? It ain't my night, I'm out of here. And it was always pushed as so much safer and fewer injuries. But this is interesting, this whole new trend here, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, there's also some connection to TRT. And another story I wanted to mention is this week, Dr. Johnny Benjamin came out, and he is blaming these guys who need TRT, in particular Frank Mir and Chael Sonnen. He's blaming their need for TRT on past steroid use. And he says, let's be honest here, how many people who've never wrecked their bodies with past steroid use naturally need TRT at 33 years old?
Mm-hmm.
And his comment is less than 1 or 2%. And actually, even if you watch the TV commercials for these testosterone pills or creams or whatever that they're selling on the, you know, the regular market now, they say the statistics show that you lose like 1% of your testosterone levels every year after you turn 30 on average,
mm-hmm.
or something,
uh-huh.
or 35, I think it is. So, I mean, these guys shouldn't even have this problem. And then this Dr. Benjamin also theorizes that there's no way that Chael Sonnen could have competed at such high levels with hypogonadism as long as he said he's had it. And when he was an NCAA wrestler, there's no way that he could, you know, get the kind of muscle tone and compete the way he did in wrestling if he really had that condition as long as he did. So they're just basically saying that, you know, this has got to be something that's a condition caused by abuse of steroids, which makes sense because, I mean, what's always the mantra about steroids? You know, it shrinks your junk.
Yeah.
So it definitely makes sense what this guy is saying. You know, I'm not sure that you could really put together an ironclad, linkage there without more evidence, but it makes sense. It definitely makes sense. And one of the things that really kind of put this issue on the map, I think, was when the guy Sosninski there came out and said that he thinks about 80% of fighters out there are using some kind of performance-enhancing drug. And a lot of these guys are turning to testosterone because, number one, it's a natural hormone. And number two, it's being used so often by guys that are not even really using it to get ready for a fight. They're using it primarily to overcome an injury. Once you get used to needing it, and once you get used to the effects of doing it, guys end up using it more and more and more for other situations. So it's going to be a hard trend to break. With the UFC kind of dragging their feet on a testing protocol, I think they're afraid. I think they're legitimately afraid that if they do institute a random drug testing program, they're going to lose a lot of their fighters.
Well, what about the State Athletic Commission, though? The State Athletic Commissions have random testing, don't they?
No, that's the thing. Like, the only reason Alistair Overeem got caught was because he had a situation where he was supposed to be tested for his first UFC fight, I think, against Brock Lesnar. He was overseas. He gave the excuse of something to deal with. His mother was sick, so he couldn't go to the testing. He delayed it, and he ended up taking the test. They could have suspended him over that, and they could have prevented the fight, but instead they said, all right, well, we're going to make a random drug testing protocol directly for you.
Okay, who was testing him? Whose idea was this to test him?
It was the Nevada State Athletic Commission.
Right, okay. So in other words, the State Athletic Commission has that power, correct?
Only with with respect to somebody who they, you know, have some kind of evidence to believe that he's avoiding tests or something.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Like a situation like that. But I don't think that they have any kind of protocol in place to just randomly test any guy in camp on any fight coming up. It's like they kind of have to have a smoking gun to justify that. And
well, how did Nate Marquardt get caught?
He got caught because he had elevated levels in the pre-fight test. It wasn't a random test, so to speak. It was a situation where I think he had an exemption. I'm not exactly sure on that, but I think that I know for a fact, actually, that Dana White knew that he was doing testosterone for one reason or another. And he had a blanket approval for that, but he didn't, you know, nobody has an approval to come into the fight with elevated levels above the max. And that's what happened to him. He came in above the max, and Dana White threw him out precisely because he knew what he was doing, you know. He was supposed to be responsible enough to use the treatment properly, and he didn't. So, and I think Dana was really lashing out on him more so because he knew what kind of earth-shattering, news reports were going to come out of that, and to just the stigma was going to get thrown around and discussed like it is now because of stuff like that. But it's just one of those things, like, guys are going to do it. They're going to find ways around the system, no matter what. And once you figure out a system that, if you stop doing it at a certain time, it's never going to show up on a test, which is what testosterone really is. It's one of those, probably one of the best ways that you can, use a substance to get ready for a fight, and it's not going to come out in your bloodstream if you stop using it at a certain time. In most cases. So it's like these guys are really using it as an advantage out of competition. They're not going into the fights, except for Jail at his last fight there with Silva. They're not typically going into the fights getting away with those high levels. They're mostly doing it in training camp to get ready for a fight. And that's just another thing with their health insurance and stuff like that they can get away with, because if they ever have a problem physically because of it, that they don't have to ever report taking it. They can just go to their doctor and say, well, I have hypogonadism, whatever, I have this condition now, so I have to get medication for it. It's just easy to hide, easy to kind of justify for a lot of these guys. I don't agree with it. I don't think it should be used as much as it is, but at the same time, you also have to look at what these guys go through. And kind of pressure they're under to be in that big spotlight, to be that main event fight, to get that fight of the night bonus, to pad their bottom line. So until you start paying these guys more money per fight, you're going to have these issues, because they're going to want to advance their careers. They're going to want to stay with the UFC, and there's so much pressure to keep that job the way the UFC runs things. And they're throwing people out left and right these days for just losing a couple fights in a row sometimes.
Yeah.
So just a reality that I'd like to believe could be different, but I don't think it ever will be unless they do a real intensive random testing program. Whatever Dana White does decide to do, it's not going to be strong enough, I don't think. But something that we're going to keep seeing, I think, over and over again. But we don't have another big UFC fight again until the 22nd of this month. And so it's going to be a while before we're... Well, that's about all we got. I want to definitely thank our sponsors, MillaFidel.com. Check them out. DrinkCocaine.com, the energy drink, not the substance. Check them out for sure. And thanks everybody for listening. And thanks Tom for another good week on the show. And hopefully maybe someday somebody out there in the boxing administration is listening to our suggestions. Maybe they'll do something about this.
Let's hope so.
All right, folks. Have a good night.
All right. Everyone have a good night.